You're listening to the Profit Connections Podcast. Entrepreneurs and franchise owners, you'll want to tune in. If you're looking to create a rock-solid business, sick of being stuck on the plateau, and ready to kick it up more than just a notch, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Sharon Galuzzo, and I believe in unleashing your full potential to create resilient, successful businesses that in turn make significant positive impacts in our world. Welcome to the Profit Connections Podcast. Profit doesn't happen by chance, it happens by design. Let's dig in. And today we have a juicy guest with us. David is an expert in an area that is becoming increasingly and more increasingly important in our businesses. That's our visual presentation, how we show up on screens. Today I have with us David Vance of Expound Media, and we're going to talk all things video and production and promotion with regard to what video can do for us and how we should use it to best move our businesses forward. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Sharon. That all sounds so exciting. I'm excited to dig in.
Now, I told David that I trusted him enough to give you his own bio today. So let's hear it, David.
Yeah, my name is David. As Sharon said, I'm the founder of Expound Media, LLC. We are a full service creative agency located here in North Carolina. We are a premium option for service based entrepreneurs, speakers, and experts to develop personality brands. And basically, we create visual elements, lead magnets, videos, now landing pages, basically anything people look at for these service based entrepreneurs so that they can get more visibility, credibility, and high ticket clients ultimately.
And I full disclosure, I do work with David. I've known him far longer than I've worked with him. He is actually he's when you talk to him, you will get, I think you'll get this through this interview today. He's a deep thinker and he sees things in a really unique way. And his ability to do interviews, his ability to pull out of you information that he can then use to market you, that he can use to build your back end in terms of your videos and your visual presentations. Like you said, he does social media, he'll do landing pages. He does all of the things that you need done, and he does it in a really unique way. And David, talk a little bit about how you have structured your business so that it's user-friendly and not time-heavy on the part of the business owner.
Yeah, absolutely. 5 years ago, or ish, whenever I started the company, it was really specifically video production, right? You know, I come from a career in high-level TV production and then was creative director for a large coaching firm. So the general algebra that I had done is people want their stuff to look better. They want cool videos. Everybody's got campaigns and stuff. They just want to plug in nice-looking video so that their stuff is more credible and that it converts better. And what we found was that we would produce a lot of stuff, people would like it, and then not deploy it in any way. So the idea behind our how the company evolved is to be one-stop shop partners for people, because I wanted to remove the chore aspect of all of this. A lot of our clients are in the early scaling phases of things, generally below 1.5 million in gross. So creating the assets needed to stand out, and you know, I use content and assets interchangeably, creating the cool looking stuff to stand out becomes really time intensive. It becomes really arduous to, even if you're not producing every aspect yourself, to find freelancers to explain what you're doing, to create projects for all of this. So the gamble that we made is that if we made enough good stuff on a consistent basis, we could package that and work with people long term, because nobody really needs just one thing. They need consistent content coming out. So like you were saying, we package it Interestingly, most stuff leads with interview and video production. We'll generally do a full day in studio with somebody and get enough interviews where we create enough content. And then for 3, 4, sometimes 6 months, we have enough raw content that we can then transmute, we can turn into different things, and we can create things one after the other and on demand as people need them. Without having to bother people. Because my biggest pet peeve in creative industries as well as in entrepreneurial industries is email tennis, right? That we all end up playing this game of, well, I need this from you before I can do this, before I can do this. So we want to make all of this as streamlined as possible and make things that people love.
That's awesome. And yeah, you do, he does things. Expound Media will do days where they have a beautiful professional studio set up, and then he'll have days where he just records you from your laptop. So there's a it's a mixture, and it's not such a heavy lift on always having stuff available. Now, everybody has a camera in their pocket these days, David. They can just walk around and record whatever they want to record, and you're able to take those things and add them in with the more professional things, the more set up things that you do. And t explain why that's a benefit and an advantage.
We know that if we can get ha or if we can have studio footage, that's obviously ideal for us and most of the people who work with us. We know that's not realistic, right? And we don't want perfect to get in the way of really good when a campaign comes from it. Generally speaking, a remote shoot can take as much as little as 1 minute for somebody to snap something up to about 30 minutes. And it follows a similar thing to a studio production. What we would normally do with something shot on webcam is add more animation to stuff, pulling people out. The question that we're always asking is how do we make this look more professional, look like it's a higher dollar, and look like it's on brand, right? So we would incorporate a lot more brand colors, pulling things from the website, and create something that looks more like a social media ad from these remote shoots. And that way we try to keep a consistent level of quality and this sort of coalition of, if that's a word, a harmony of design, both visually and messaging wise, so that everything looks basically on the same level, regardless of if we shoot it in studio or shoot it on a webcam with people.
And it's really important whenever you are building a brand, whether it's a personal brand, and some business owners want a personal brand, or the brand of your business. And whenever you have consistency of your colors and your fonts and all of that stuff, when you have that consistency across the board, then whenever somebody sees your stuff, they recognize it before you even say anything. And that's, talk about why that's really important, David.
I mean, there's the pretentious creative artist version of this that could go into it. I think the bigger thing is that there is an undercurrent in a lot of these industries that we're playing in, especially online entrepreneurial world, where people are so coached by people, where there's been this doctrine of delivering the bare minimum on things. And I mean, we're in a very crowded marketplace right now of people demanding attention from things. So the easiest way to elevate the things that you're putting out and to give yourself credibility on a consistent basis in your social media is to have those branded elements. You don't have to be an expert on it. You can hire somebody who is, or just have the basic color correlations going on. The innate thing that you're wanting to convey through brand harmony, through getting those colors on everything, of everything looking similar. You've actually got a great brand. Internally, we all love your colors a lot. But just picking one and sticking with it is going to create that visual identity. Because remember, the first things people are clicking on now aren't websites. And almost all In almost all industries now, the first click is going to be one social media or another. I know yours is Facebook, ours is Instagram, as we track it. So we want consistent content that looks the same, feels the same, and creates the brand image that we're trying to create, because ultimately that's what a client journey is.
And what's important in terms of why this, why the brand identity, why the keeping of the colors and that kind of thing is, when you're on social media, most of the time you're scrolling, right? And you want to, it's a way to stop the scroll. And it takes a human adult, and these numbers are old now, so it might even be more, at least 7 times to be exposed to your information before they're ready to even look further. So if they're scrolling by and they always see that my social media is, oh, it's always that, that purple, gold, or purple, orange, and teal colors, that always comes up whenever you see my social media as you're scrolling through. Oh, yeah, there she is again. I'm going to stop and see what she has to say. Or, you know what? I'll just keep scrolling. And what it does is it builds up that memory in your brain, so that you've seen it before, you've seen it before, you've seen it before. And now, oh, maybe now today I'm going to actually look at that video, or I'm going to make sure I always stop and watch those videos because I know who they are and I know what they're going to provide. Some of my favorite things on social media, I will stop and watch silly videos. I think it's called the Break Room Chronicles. I'll be honest, it's two women, and one of them lip syncs and the other one kind of dances in pink heels. And I don't care what song they're doing, I will always stop and watch it because they have a repetitive thing that's always funny. I have that kind of sense of humor. So when you're building your brand, if you have that consistency, that somebody will go, oh yeah, that's them again, they'll stop, they'll watch, they'll interact with that thing if it resonates with them. So it's really about, your voice and what is resonating, and why is your voice and what you're presenting out there, and consistency, what will that get you in terms of connecting with people on socials?
Yeah, I think what you pointed out is really important. There's also this element on social media where there's a lot of trainings right now trying to get people to follow influencer formulas and chase vanity metrics. And I believe it's hurting a lot of people who are trying to scale businesses, because the metrics that influencers care about are different. The look of what they're doing and their end goals are different. They're trying to find brand partnerships to get Gucci bags, whereas a lot of our clients, and I think a lot of your viewers, are ultimately trying to create a brand that leads people towards making a high ticket decision, sometimes in the multiple tens of thousands of dollars. So any training, when people are talking about voice, I would be wary of anybody trying to push somebody to chase TikTok trends or social media trends specifically to get raw viewership. It's always fun to watch a number uptick from it, but I always recommend to people when we're looking at voice to create things for the internet that are reflective of A, something that you like. And can support. People are always looking for templates, and the most interesting things that you can create are things that are interesting to you, because that means they're probably interesting to your specific audience. Also, the voice that people are creating on social media needs to be one that is positioned in such a way that it sets somebody up towards understanding that what they're offering is a premium service. So everything that you're creating has to have some version of, if not luxury, then at least value behind it. Some people will try to channel their voice through a very accessible image and try to be people's friends. I think there's an elevation of voice that you have to see when building a brand for a small business.
Yeah,
I
and
don't know if
I like what
I.
you said about influencers. I'll ask you to talk a little bit about influencers, but I literally watched a video yesterday about an influencer who was he made his name on social media doing something really cool with mirrors, and he said, this video popped up and he said, "Hey, You probably haven't seen me for a while. I thought I'd reintroduce myself. And he literally told a story about the fact that he wanted eyes on his videos. That was his goal. And he did get that. But he also ran a business. He also did some other things. And what that influencer track did not do for him was build those other things, because everyone was just looking for his mirror videos. And he was really talking about, he said, I got what I wanted. What I wanted was a lot of people watching my videos. So he didn't want anything beyond that. He didn't plan beyond that. And so he found, as that sort of influencer, that it wasn't fulfilling in his like complete life, his business and what he wanted to promote that way. So just tease a little bit into that influencer position. And you did a little bit on why we're different, but just a little bit on that influencer piece.
Yeah, we actually had a similar experience where we had a fractional account with a law firm type thing, and we grew the social media following really well based on their stated goals, but they were having very little conversion into even free consultation from them. What they, and I'll accept my level of responsibility from, had done was exactly that, right? So that's the other end of it, that they had spent a lot of money on creating a thing or things they wanted to create because they had a marketing consultant who wanted to get them organic viewership on TikTok. But ultimately, they're they're family office lawyers, right? It's not where their audience is, and viewership doesn't convert over to what they're ultimately looking to achieve. So content, content is important. Getting it out consistently is important, but there is that facet of remembering what your ultimate goal is through all of this. Finding the key points that you want somebody to find after a speaking gig or after downloading a free resource or just Googling for what you're doing, and always keeping in mind that your body of work is at some point going to have to get towards having somebody make a decision to get on a call or give you a credit card, right? So an influencer doesn't have to worry about that, whereas unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you think of it, we as small business owners absolutely do.
I love that. And I think it's a really important to have that distinction, because I think sometimes as business owners, we're following that shiny object. Oh yeah, all I have to do is get more views. If you're getting more views on something that doesn't directly tie or make that jump into what it is you're doing, then you have eyeballs. But like you said, you don't have that traction. You don't have people calling you and making appointments with you and doing business with you specifically, because you've chosen sort of a more entertainment route. Not that your content can't be entertaining, but it also has to have a purpose. So what's that look like when you're actually mapping out? What do you actually want from your content?
Yeah, it's an interesting time we're in, or especially what we're entering into, in that 10 years ago, when we were looking at social media campaigns or full marketing campaigns, there was a lot of function on volume, right? Of you're going to win this. We're in the attention economy. Every business coach learned the word attention economy and said it a whole bunch. And of some of them made a lot of money saying those words out loud. Well, right now, what do we do in an attention economy when technology is making a game that we can't really win on volume, right? And there's some people, my peers, people are trying to play that game, the AI game, whatever, of, I have people showing me things that can generate random posts every 2 hours. And I don't think for our clients that is functionally what we want. Like, we can probably get raw viewership, but we're never going to compete. So then we ask what the competitive advantage that we have in competitive or in a competitive marketplace for social media content. And I think that's the humanness of people, especially when you're a human forward brand, someone like yourself, somebody like a an attorney, somebody, anybody selling high ticket services where you're answering the question of why would I work with you specifically then? We do know algorithmically, for social media, there's a big gap between posting 3 times a week at least and not posting 3 times a week. So there is a number in the sand. But we're starting to see this movement. It's called the vinylization of online communities, right? It's asked the question of why does somebody buy vinyl in a world where Spotify exists? And our forecast for what's coming up in 2027 and through the end of the decade is that we'll go into these smaller, more insular ecosystems, right? That we're not going to want our social media content, our videos, our YouTubes to resonate with wide audiences, which is a game, again, that's tough to play, harder to win. We're wanting to create rabid fans on things and create real specificity of message, of tone, of things like that. So that's the overall thing that we're looking at from it. Video continues to be our number one metrics. We were just monitoring it. On our monthly ad meeting, we're still seeing video ads outperform what static ads by factors of 5 to 7 times on cost per dollar, cost per acquisition. So we're still wanting to see a lot of video, but really, I would urge any coach watching this or anybody who's in that service-based things to start returning to some level of thoughtful post, short form video, and knock off or out 12 posts a month, and they'll be looking good. That was a long answer to a short question,
No, that
but
was a
we could
great.
talk about it
You
all day.
always give very great, thoughtful answers. I
Thank
started
you.
this with what a deep thinker you are. David, he's very modest. He didn't say this, but you have recognition for your interview skills. Share some about that.
Yeah, I was named the number one interview in the country, or
Oh, did you hear
interviewer
that? He's so
in the
modest. He was
country.
named the number one interviewer in the country. He swallowed that. He's so modest.
It was very impressive. But interviewing's not that hard. Well, you're interviewing me, so I don't want to say it's not that hard. Interviewing is just about curiosity, right? And knowing, making people look good. A lot of the content we create is from interview, which I think is a differentiator for us because a lot of creative firms are built around marketing scripts, templates, and getting the words right. Whereas I think it's easier to be able to talk to people on a human level, and it's easier to create something compelling when somebody is having a human conversation than when they're paying attention to the commas in their script. So for that reason, most of the videos, I think we are on like an 80-20 split nowadays. Most of the promos we create and a vast majority of the social media content comes from having conversations like these, and getting to getting past the syntax and into the actual content of what people are trying to say, how they're trying to move people, and what they're trying to do in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like David is very good at asking probing questions so that you're saying the things that your audience wants to hear, as opposed to what was that marketing stuff that I came up with, and what are the exact things that I'm supposed to say that sometimes can trip us up. And by working with someone like David, by having those interview questions, you're getting into the heart of what you do, as opposed to, up here in your head thinking about what does the script say. So I think that's a really powerful differentiation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting creating short form video content for enough people. And it's always fascinating to interview somebody who's never been interviewed in a long term, in a long form interview format like that. Because one of the things, especially when I'm working with a new client on things, is to try to break down some of the keywordisms behind things of getting past the left brain, especially when I'm working with engineers or attorneys, often getting to a point where they can say what they mean and say it in a way, ideally, that they sound passionate about it or sound interested in what they're doing, because that's going to be more compelling in long-term social media than even the best script that I could write for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. So, David, I have a question for you. Every business owner has a moment when things didn't go as they planned. What is the moment in your business that didn't go as you expected, and that forced you to change how you operate?
One stands out early on. A lot of our early marketing came from trade shows and event sponsorship stuff. We paid for a $6,000 booth in Orlando with it was called something like the Total Health Conference or something like that. Their marketing and sales conversations had talked about, there would be a lot of doctors there who tend to be good clients for us. There'd be a lot of practitioners, people creating health-based services and things. And they said there would be 8,000 people over 3 days, and getting to Orlando, paying for flights for me and me and my employee, paying for hotels, paying for all of that. We were probably 10 grand in the pocket, and over 3 days, there were 180 people or so that showed up to the conference, which was a first for me, because generally people will couch things, and there were near riots from sponsors, and nobody could figure out if this was an intentional scam or an unintentional scam, but something happened front, and it took me a long time to be able to write that off mentally, because I was in the moment. I was like, okay, surely somebody will make this right, and nobody had any intention of making it right. So that was my first encounter with a big marketing swing that was just totally a bummer on
Yeah.
things. And
How did that change what you did moving forward then?
Number one, it made me realize I needed to have cash reserves on things, and just have a mentality that no one thing can ruin us. In the, you know,
Yeah.
you have to take swings on some things, but you gotta have enough money to play, and you gotta, in blackjack, you talk about play the shoe, not the hand, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is being, this might be pessimistic, but being more selective about the things that we're sponsoring. Early on, I was throwing money at just about everything on things. Anybody who had a spot for me, I would take it, but it really led to a philosophy of finding the right ways to spend money for exposure, conversion, lead generation, rather than just spraying it all over. So those two major things. The other thing is we ended up finding reining in the ways we were marketing on things. We do a lot less in-person expo hall stuff than we used to. So it just changed philosophically a lot of the things of who we trust, what we do, and a real streamlining of the lead acquisition process.
Yeah. And this is something that I was told in one of my trainings was that respectfully, promoters are liars. They are telling you their ideal of who they want to have in the room. I had a similar experience. However, I did get some of my money back because that was the deal, where they promised us hundreds of people, and it happened to be a really rainy weekend. It was a multi-day event, and I think we had 60 people, including all of the vendors and speakers at the event. So yeah, things don't always work out when you're investing in one of those big things. So yeah,
Yeah.
you need to have a strategy around how many people did they have last year? What worked? Ask other people who were there. Did they really get what they said? Did they get the results that they were promoting?
That's a
And you
huge
have
one.
to sort of take everything that a promoter who's wants you to join their whatever with a small grain of salt, and you need to have, like David said, that discernment of figuring out, is this a good investment for us? And looking at, being really proactive, having all of your ducks in a row before your money, your time, do the research on the event, do all that homework before, and build that sort of template, that system. Before I commit to this event, I'm going to find out all of these things. I'm going to find out these things about the event. I'm going to look into my finances. I'm going to make informed decisions, not knee-jerk, excited, ego-driven decisions.
Yeah, and I think you're right in asking the right questions. Because your leads have to come from somewhere, so you're going to be paying somebody money in some capacity through it. But the question, especially for a virtual sponsorship, which is more common now, I basically won't take one without a minimum guarantee, and that's what I'm doing all of my conversion math based around it. Everybody will talk about tickets sold from things. But the other thing, like you were saying, is asking somebody who's sponsored in the past through things. What was your experience like there? The other question I would have people ask if they're interested in sponsorships as their cold lead generation thing is ask people where their tickets came from on things, because a big red flag is if all tickets came from their list affiliates or some sort of giveaway on things, because that means that their show up is going to be much lower than what they're going to tell you optimistically. And an in-person event, like you were saying, is like I want to see 3 years now worth of things or endorsements from something like a content marketing world or something. They're not going to give you a minimum, but they have the stats to, or they have the numbers to show you of what you can expect. So, barring some sort of act of God, they're going to replicate something like that.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love that. And David, you said that you have a gift for our listeners. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, you can go to expoundresource.com and download our video marketing starter guide. It's everything. It's a combination. It's 15 easy pages of if you don't know where to start with video marketing for your social media, email, and landing pages. It tells you everything that you should make and when. So go download it. I think it's good.
I love it. That's a great gift. Especially if you're looking at this, you're actively doing videos or you're starting to do videos. It's a great resource to get you focused, get you streamlined into what you need to focus on first and the most important things. So thank you for that awesome gift, David. And also, we will have it in our portal, profitconnectors.club. That's profit connectors, because you're doing the connecting. Profitconnectors.club. That's our portal. That's our community. You go in there, it's free to join, and you'll get David's gift, information about David, and also this interview, and all of our other podcasts that we've recorded so far, and all of the gifts from the previous guests that we've had. So you go to profitconnectors.club, you can grab that gift. And thank you so much for being here with us today, David. You always have such incredible insight and valuable information. And so it was my honor to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Sharon. It's always fun to talk to you. Anytime.
Thanks for joining us. Remember to build with clarity, at lead with purpose. And thank you for joining. We'll catch you next time. Hey, Profit Connectors. That's it for another Profit Connections podcast. Thank you for joining us. If you're ready to make moves and connections that take your business to the next level, want to get to know us and our speakers better, and get your gifts and resources, head over to the website profitconnectors.club. That's profitconnectors.club, and get your goodies right now.